we have a special offer for Issues Etc. Reformation Club members. If you join or upgrade your membership in our monthly or annual giving program during January or February, we'll add the new Concordia Psalter to the list of current membership benefits. T-shirts, books, broadcast transcripts, and advertising for your confessional Lutheran congregation. You can find out the benefits of being an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron at issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Or contact Craig, 618-223-8385, or Craig at issuesetc.org. Join or upgrade your membership in the Issues Etc. Reformation Club in January or February, and we'll send you the new Concordia Psalter along with your other premiums. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
You're the perfect hunting machine. Fearless. Relentless. You've been searching for one thing your whole life. And she's down there.
Make sure this is the right one.
It's her.
Good. Kill her.
Who are you?
I'm here to help you.
It can be difficult for people from underdeveloped worlds to hear that their planet is not the only inhabited planet.
Your Majesty, Kane was the best soldier I ever went into battle with.
If she's what you say she is, we're not getting off this planet without a fight.
Your Earth is a very small part of a very large industry.
I feel I have you at somewhat of a disadvantage.
Is that because you kidnapped me?
Some lives will always matter more than others.
That's an excerpt from the trailer for the movie Jupiter Ascending, a sci-fi thriller. It comes from the people who gave us the Matrix trilogy, the Wachowskis, formerly known as the Wachowski brothers, and it is going to be a feast for the eyes. Now, will it be anything substantive? It's easy nowadays in the era of CGI and big stars to make movies that are a feast for the eyes, but do they deliver anything? Our guest for the first half hour of the program says this movie is derivative, and we'll see what he means by that coming up here. It's Tuesday afternoon, February the 17th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in. For the first half hour, we're going to be reviewing two movies, Jupiter Ascending and the SpongeBob movie. A little bit later, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will join us as we continue our series with him responding to evangelical proof texts. We'll take up an evangelical cliche that really has no text whatsoever, that Christianity is not a religion, it's a relationship. How often have you heard that one? We'll see what Pastor Brian Wolfmiller has to say about that. After that, David Wood will join us from Answering Muslims. We're going to talk about the beheading of 21 Christians, Coptic Christians, by ISIS. And then Pastor Tom Baker joins us to teach a Sunday school lesson. We'll be looking at Jesus healing Jairus' daughter in Mark chapter 5. Now, our call-in number for the next 2 hours for your questions and your comments, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address is talkback@issuesetc.org, our Twitter address @issuesetc, and our beloved on-demand listeners can always use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Joining us to review the movies Jupiter Ascending and the SpongeBob movie, Pastor Ted Giese, a regular guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
This comes with somewhat high expectations in my book because they made probably one of the most formative sci-fi thrillers of, the 20th and 21st centuries, the Matrix trilogy. What have the Wachowskis, what have they produced this time? You say it's a fish out of water story, but it's also derivative. What do you mean by both of those things?
Well, like The Matrix, you had the main character Neo, who discovers that there's more going on than what he had originally perceived. So again, you've got this same sort of kind of general story. You've got Mila Kunis, this time playing a character named Jupiter Jones, who is the daughter of a Russian immigrant, and she works with her family doing cleaning. So she's basically somebody who cleans houses. So you see lots of scenes of her at the beginning of the movie, near the beginning of the movie, where she's cleaning toilets and things like that. But what happens is she discovers that she's actually the exact genetic duplicated, quote-unquote, reincarnation of an intergalactic queen who, you know, ruled over all of these various planets and with her family, and now she's part of this big, crazy intergalactic world. So the fish out of water part is that here you've got a lady who's more comfortable scrubbing toilet bowls than, you know, being called Her Majesty, and suddenly now she's in outer space, and she's embroiled in the middle of this giant, you know, story of power being struggling over different planets and things like that.
And you say it's derivative. It has some pretty glaring plot similarities, almost parallels,
yeah,
with a couple other classic sci-fi movies. What are they?
Yeah, well, you know, like the whole Feast for the Eyes kind of thing. There's a couple big sci-fi movies from the past, and they're kind of movies that they've had legs over time kind of as cult hits, but they, at the time, kind of didn't really perform exactly the way people thought initially, which is what this movie has been doing, too. It hasn't made the money they thought it was going to make. They spent a lot of money on the visual end of it. So there's a couple movies. One is David Lynch's movie Dune from 1984, and then there's also the film Flash Gordon, which is in the kind of stream of the Flash Gordon serials, but from 1980. And those movies had, like, big, lavish kind of set pieces and beautiful-looking movies, but they're also kind of, I don't know, goofy and shallow and kind of strange on their own, the way they come across in the film. Like, in the case of Dune, written by Frank Herbert originally, a really good science fiction book, in the hands of David Lynch, kind of doesn't turn out to be exactly what people had hoped it was going to be. But there are some similarities. Just the visual lavishness of these movies, they're science fiction films. This Jupiter Ascending kind of fits in with that. Also, there in both of those cases, you have that same fish out of water kind of story. So in Dune, you have Paul Atreides, who ends up off, you know, with a bunch of guys in the desert when he himself grew up on a planet that was a water planet. And then in Flash Gordon, it's like a high school, I think high school, college age athlete, a football player, who then ends up being savior of the universe, you know, kind of thing, as he gets taken out into the outer space. So there's some similarities. When you're watching Jupiter Ascending, you're going to feel like it's kind of part of that same kind of genre of filmmaking.
Now, you say that there is a general worldview that makes up the framework for Jupiter Ascending. What is it?
Well, it's not really a Christian worldview. Like what you kind of get when you're sitting watching the movie is something maybe more Buddhist, because you do have this kind of concept of reincarnation that's in it. But the other thing is that there's kind of this real naturalistic kind of approach where the supernatural, spiritual end of things is very lightly covered over. It's not a really important detail. And the reason why it seems like it's not an important detail is that I'd mentioned that Mila Kunis plays this woman who's supposed to be a reincarnation of a queen who ruled the big, vast stretch of the universe. Well, when she died, she had her inheritance pass on to her own children. So you get this kind of thing where all of the rich and powerful people are extending their lives as long as they possibly can, because they're trying to make kind of heaven for themselves in this world. So the things you would consider to be part of the potential, like I guess the nuts and bolts part of heaven, you know, like having a physically perfect body, living in a kind of a paradise, things like that. Not necessarily as Christians when we think of heaven, you know, when we look forward to being with Christ, but the kind of naturalistic physical kind of parts of it. They're trying to create that in the universe. They don't want to die. They want to extend their life. They're willing to massacre entire planets full of people just to take an essence from the dead people and to extend their own lives, the children of this queen. And now as she comes back into the story, Mila Kunis's character, Jupiter Jones, she basically, because of her genetic makeup, can take away their inheritance and that back for her own. And then that creates the drama in the course of the story. But they're really focused on the now, and not so much on any kind of redemption in the future. They really have to extend their life now because it's almost as though there is nothing else coming, and time is their biggest enemy.
What are the merits of the movie?
I don't know if they're... really are that many merits of this movie. It's kind of a dumb movie. I mean, even when you know, kind of paint it like I was just talking about, it's still not really that great. The central character played by Mila Kunis is this real, supposed to be kind of like the, I don't know, the queen of the universe, and she's just a damsel in distress, like over and over and over again. This isn't exactly a rich female character. I guess that the only thing that I guess you might be able to draw from this is a very weak kind of connection to the idea of somebody, you know, willing to sacrifice themselves for the salvation of other people. So in the end of the movie, Mila Kunis's character, she's willing to die in order to save all the people of Earth. And, of course, by the end of it, no one on Earth knows she's done this, and they just go about their lives. So it just doesn't really add up in terms of something that a Christian's going to really enjoy, apart from just enjoying the beauty of what they've put together in terms of, like, the technical stuff. But I wasn't as impressed by it as I'd kind of thought maybe I might be.
Pastor Ted Giese is our guest on this Tuesday afternoon, February the 17th. We're reviewing a couple of movies. When we come back from this break, we will go to one that makes no pretense at being, well, anything other than what it is, the SpongeBob movie. We'll review that with Pastor Ted Giese right after this.
And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Athanasius, Bishop of Alexandria in the 4th century, was known for boldly confessing Jesus Christ as both true God and true man. This is what we do at St. Athanasius Lutheran Church in Vienna, Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C., continuing this historic confession of our Savior who died for us and now comes to us in word and sacrament. If you live in the D.C. area or just visiting, come join us. For more information, find us on the web, St. Athanasius Lutheran Church.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
At last, it is mine.
With this magic book, any evil plan I write comes true. But to harness his power, I need the final page that is protected deep below the surface by one legendary hero.
Will you stop playing that tiny piano?
Sorry.
I think we have a few minutes before he gets here.
Oh, he's right on top of us.
Burn the door.
Got it.
Bullseye.
There's the trailer to the latest SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water. And if it takes its cue, as it seems to have done, from the popular cartoon, it will be 93 minutes of pretty much undiluted silliness. Pastor Ted Giese is our guest, reviewing a couple of movies, turning to the SpongeBob movie. Ted, first of all, is there anything wrong with 93 minutes of undiluted silliness?
No, this is really silly. It's a silly, silly movie and weird and strange, but there's nothing wrong with that. It's really fun. I had a good time. I didn't know that I was going to be doing a review of SpongeBob SquarePants, the movie. I knew that it was going to make a lot of money. I'd been planning to write something on Jupiter Ascending. I was at the theater, sitting in Jupiter Ascending, and the film stopped, and they canceled my movie, and I just thought, well, I'll go see the SpongeBob movie. I went in, sat down. I don't really have a lot of background with SpongeBob SquarePants. Like, I didn't watch a lot of the show or anything like that. I'm vaguely aware of it. So I sat down, and it was just a strange, silly 93 minutes or so of just craziness. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was just a fun, strange time.
Well, it almost seems strange to say that there's a bit of a learning curve if you just walk into this movie. If you're unfamiliar with the bizarre world that SpongeBob and his friends inhabit, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I felt like, I think I said, I felt like you just, maybe you go to some house party and all the people there seem to know each other. They've known each other for years. They got all these inside jokes. And you're just kind of trying to keep up. There's a little bit of that. There's a lot of inside jokes, a lot of little things. Some of it's pretty obvious. But yeah, there is a learning curve. Like, people who know this material, I think, are going to really enjoy this movie. And I really enjoyed it. I didn't even know anything about it too much. But I think that they would even more so probably enjoy this.
So why do you think, first of all, animated films, we've talked about this before, but then movies like this, of course, they've got a lot of history with people who've been watching television for, well, I don't know, it's got to be now at least a decade, watching the cartoon on television. Why do you think movies like this get made? I mean, other than simply to cash in on the popularity.
Well, yeah, if you can think back to the distant past of two weekends ago, this movie was number one at the box office. It made just a huge amount of money. Of course, it didn't beat out 50 Shades of Grey this last weekend, but there's a lot of money to be made with kids' movies. In the last year, kids' movies haven't really been doing as well, but maybe that's because there's a little bit too many of them. But you know, Hollywood can kind of bank on a really good kids' movie, and it makes money because kids can't go to the movies by themselves. So you've got, like, usually one or two adults with the kids, plus, you know, popcorn and pop and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's a money maker for studios and for the box office. So people are definitely interested in kids' movies. The really neat thing about this one is that it combines, like, that old-fashioned, like, cell animation with the CGI kind of style animation. So you get in 3D, it's really neat because you get like that kind of flat looking older animation, but kind of popping with some 3D elements to it. And then you go right into the CGI stuff when the SpongeBob and his friends come into the real world in this movie, and that's kind of fun. There's some variety, and it keeps you on your toes.
Now, I just want to talk about the central character for a little bit, because I think the popularity of the cartoon has been largely due to the fact that the central character is this completely guileless little yellow sponge who lives his life in almost blissful innocence all the time. And I think that's what's been so endearing about it. He's got very interesting friends and stupid scenarios that he gets involved with, but he is a child in square pants. He is the quintessential child.
He has total childlike simplicity, and he is very innocent and quite gullible. Like, he can be taken advantage of at times. He loves everybody, and he doesn't realize that there may be people who don't love him or have issues with him, and he'll be friends with anybody, and he just loves everything. So this is a kind of an interesting character, and he's, because of all of that, he seems willing to embrace the right train of actions, you know, more so than you'd expect from, like, there's nothing holding him back from doing the right thing. So there is a spot in the movie where mistakenly they think that, like, I guess the whole premise of the movie is that he works at this little restaurant in the town of Bikini Bottom at the bottom of the sea, and they've got this ambrosia-like Krabby Patty burger. Everybody's got to eat it a couple times a day, and they lose the recipe. And they've got to go find the recipe. They don't know what has happened to it. It's actually been stolen by a pirate played by Antonio Banderas in the real world, who wants to open up his own seaside, food truck. But they got to find it. So they're mistaken at one point in thinking that maybe the quote-unquote sandwich gods had taken it away from them. And SpongeBob then willingly goes to what he thinks will be his death, as a sacrifice in order to save the people of the inhabitants of Bikini Bottom so that they would be able to get back their Krabby Patty burgers. And in a certain way, there is something similar to the willingness of Christ to go to his death, like you hear from Hebrews chapter 12, where it talks about, for the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. And just also that willingness to lay down his life for his friends. Of course, the difference is that Jesus is not, you know, somebody with childlike simplicity. He's not naive or gullible. But there is a little bit of a connection there. So if parents want to kind of address that little subplot in the SpongeBob movie might be something to just start a little conversation with. And then take it into something more serious in Scripture.
Finally, with about a minute, because this is going to be for kids, parents to take their kids and vice versa, by and large. And, you know, adults will be shelling out the money, but the kids will be the ones wanting to see it. Any concerns, any cautions about this? Is this one that you can pretty much take the kids to without any concerns?
Yeah, I think that you can take the kids to this. This isn't the only thing is that because as a viewer you're sitting there and you know that there is no sandwich gods even within the story itself, that what I was talking about, there is kind of a cynical kind of like edge to that little part of the story as well, in that maybe the people who made the movie are trying to say that religion is kind of irrational. But, I mean, really, frankly, the whole entire movie is irrational. Like, this is the goofiest movie you're going to see. It's just really wildly strange and absurd. And that's fine. I mean, it's okay to have a wildly strange and absurd movie every once in a while, and this is definitely going to be it. There are some good stories in there in the midst of all of it. It's kind of episodic. One thing is there's a character, Plankton, who's kind of like an enemy, and he's taught a lesson about teamwork, working together with people he didn't expect to work together with in order to solve the problems. And that's a good life lesson kind of thing in the movie as well.
Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media. You can read his reviews of Jupiter Ascending and the SpongeBob movie at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Ted, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller responding to evangelical proof texts. We're not going to respond so much to a text as to a cliche that has no text to back it up, but you've heard it many times. Christianity isn't a religion, it's a relationship. We'll see what he thinks about that after this.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, Coordinator for Stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship, lcms.org/stewardship.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel, more than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for you and the divine service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org, St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.
In Hosea 4, we read, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." At the CLCC, we educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Christians would if they learned what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website at theclcc.org. See what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us, and encourage your pastors to hold an event in your area. For more information, go to theclcc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.